This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we're going to do two reviews for you. One is The Call of the Wild, and the other is
Blumhouse's Fantasy Island.
Perfect.
That's as good as that review is going to get, trust me. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And let's get straight into it then for The Call of the Wild, which I was lucky enough to see. Wayne couldn't make it along to an advanced screening with thanks to Natasha Louise Enterprises. Thank you so much, Tash.
We love Tash.
It was a hugely advanced screening, so much so that as we record, I'm allowed to release this.
Holy balls. So
gotta wait.
You've gagged.
So I've got to wait. No, embargoed.
Embargoed.
Is the official term.
That's right. Last night you were gagged. What? All right.
Oh, God. The Call of the Wild is, of course, based on the famous short story by Jack London.
Its
previous film adaptation was all the way back in 1935, which I did not know.
Crap.
This one is directed by Chris Sanders, co-director of the How to Train Your Dragon series, screenplay by Michael Green. It stars Hazza Ford.
Hazza Ford is in it. I didn't know that.
Dan Stevens and then Omar Sy and Karen Gillan and Bradley Whitford have two very small roles
in the
film. It's 100 minutes long. The budget was $109 million, which is truly astounding to me. That it all went into the dog, because this is a story of a domesticated St. Bernard Scotch Collie dog named Buck. Gets stolen from his life of privilege, shall we say, and ends up having to become a sled dog up in Alaska.
Oh.
And it really does follow the dog, like even the short story does, though they've cleaned this up a lot for political correctness, let's say, at this particular time.
Wait, what do you mean?
Well, in the original short story, the Native Americans are some of the villains. They're attacking people and the like. That doesn't happen in this movie.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, so okay. they fixed all that up, and now it's all about sort of jealous gold prospectors and that kind of stuff.
Ah, the noughties.
Yeah, the film, not noughties.
Naughty, what is it?
When the 2020s, man.
Is it teens?
Not even the teens anymore.
No, we're the teens. We're the 20s. That's right, bitch. Hey, sorry, I've had the roaring 20s.
Oh, God.
Sorry, it's early, everyone.
That would be odd. Yes, it was a little early for us. Look, the film is fine. It's a kid's film, largely. It follows the dog. The dog is brought to life with largely CGI. I've obviously mapped it onto a real dog, but it has expressions which are totally unrealistic.
Is that so? So yes. It's like that?
Yeah. It's overly emotionalized, if I can put it that way.
Does the dog look good?
Looks okay.
Okay.
But you can totally tell you're not watching something that's photorealistic.
Really?
Yeah. You can tell.
And was it a choice or was it a mistake?
Yeah, it's not a mistake. They spent $110 million on this. This is as good as they can get at this stage.
Surely all that money is basically Harry's walking around sort of like his budget.
To be clear, Harry comes in and out of the narrative, but he's only really a big part of it for the last half of the film. So just temper yourself there if you're expecting like
lots of Harry.
Hazza is second. The dog is the star by a long, long way in this movie. It's kind of like three stories almost of the dog sort of phases of his life and how he answers the call of the wild.
Really? Is it good?
Look, it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. I think it's a kid's film. If you've got a kid who... It'll probably be PG. Like, there's some violence in it, implied violence, and, you know, not all the dogs live, if I can put it that way. So...
I can't handle it!
Although, then they do take a cheat out at one point where they kind of mention that the dogs probably survive. So, like... In one way.
Give me something. Yeah, give me something. Absolutely. So,
and the dogs, particularly the best part of the film is when he's part of a sled team.
Does he like talk or anything?
No, doesn't go that
far. So it's not
that.
No. Okay, all right.
But he's way more intelligent than, like, all the dogs in this film are really intelligent. Like, understanding when we talk to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This sounds weird.
Not in terms of training, but although it is part of it, it's like it goes beyond that. It's hyper realistic.
Yeah, so you can actually like I know. Okay. All right.
It's nothing to write home about. It's not going to make squillions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's a February release and am I going to have some things to say about January and February releases by the end of this episode. But it's absolutely fine. I probably can't score it more than like a 55. But
well, it's not for you. Do you think your daughter would like it?
Would she? Yes, I guess she likes dogs.
Would you let her watch it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, as a almost 7-year-old, I let her watch it. Okay. So it's that kind of level. But then my daughter has seen things like The Goonies and stuff like that. So
tougher.
You might say bad parenting, but she's well aware of where her scary factor is, and The Goonies falls on the right side.
No, you want her to be like The Goonies is. You should show every child to see The Goonies. That's just how that is. Like here, we used to ride bikes. Yeah.
Riding bikes is cool,
yeah.
And here's why. No, so absolutely fine, and it is a recommend for people with children. Otherwise, you can probably wait till see it when it comes out for streaming options.
Coolio.
That's not the main review, though. The main review is one we both saw,
mm-hmm.
and that is Blumhouse's Fantasy Island, Wayne.
Or as I refer to it, Damn you for making me watch this porn.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I made some bold claims last week that nothing could be worse than Midway. Or two weeks ago. This film is...
Yeah, it is! It really
it's
is.
Trying really it hard really to be worse, is. But we'll get there in a moment. This is directed by Jeff Wadlow, who was the director of one of the... When I saw this, because... Mm. Let me back up a second.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, we saw Birds of Prey.
Yep.
They had a trailer for this.
Yes.
And I noticed at the end something I hadn't noticed before, and that is directed by Jeff Wadlow.
And?
He is the director of one of my most hated horror films of all time, Truth or Dare, which is another Blumhouse film.
Yeah, I know. You've heard. I remember hearing you talk about that.
I ragged on it in the top 10 worst films of the 2010s, horror films of the 2010s. Anyway, as you might expect, this one's produced by Jason Blum, Mark Toberoff, and Jeff Wadlow himself. It stars Michael Peña, Maggie Q, Lucy Hale, bunch of people, Ryan Hansen from Veronica Mars, and Jimmy O. Yang. Oh, and Michael Rooker popping up as well.
By the way, Jimmy O. Yang is from Silicon Valley.
I wondered. Okay. Yeah. He seemed like he had another sort of sitcom-y vibe to him, but I've never seen that show. Its budget, only $7 million. And that might climb it for me over Midway.
Yeah, they've done quite a bit with $7 million.
Yeah, I will fully acknowledge. And that's Blumhouse's model. Make a film on the cheap, between $5 and $10 million usually.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It makes $20 to $25. Everybody's happy.
Although they are cluttering the culture and people's lives up with shit like this, that is a great model.
When I say everyone's happy, I mean the makers of the film are happy. The viewers, not so fucking much.
No. That's right. And it's funny because I know you have a particular, like, you hate Blumhouse, right?
I have a love-hate relationship because some of...
They did Get Out, didn't they?
Yeah, they did Get Out.
That's insane.
And Upgrade.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. Upgrade's good.
Oh, and the Halloween reboot, which I also really enjoyed. So occasionally he knocks it out of the park. And the listeners in the Facebook listening community do remind me of that.
Okay.
But then for every one of those, there's three of these. Okay. And it's obviously a reboot of the TV show Fantasy Island. But over to you, Wayne. What is Fantasy Island about?
Well, in this, as you say, remake, the enigmatic Mr. Rourke, played by Michael Peña, makes the secret dreams of his lucky guests come true at a luxurious but remote tropical resort. Now, these people come there. There's the young millennial chick with the phone. There's two bros of indeterminate race.
One's white, one is
mixed race. Mixed race. Sorry, mixed race. I'm indeterminate race, so
That's true.
I think of it the same way. You got like the MILF, and you've got what else? Who's the other?
The army guy,
yeah. Right? So it's a bunch of people, not necessarily cliched, except for the damn millennial. But they come by, and of course, when you know they do their fantasy, they inadvertently turn into nightmares, and that forces the guests to solve the island's mystery in order to escape. That's the movie.
All right, Wayne, that is the film.
You're just like
I've not buried any lead here. What did you think of Fantasy Island?
Okay, look, Fantasy Island, the TV show, was a show I watched occasionally as a young lad. There were grandparents involved. And that show was like, that was one of those shows that they had back in the day that was designed purely to accommodate a parade of flashy guest stars. It's a lot like The Love Boat. Everything's right, Love Boat. Just like famous people just turning up for one episode, right?
Because they got to go on some cruise somewhere.
It's a showcase, exactly, for some bullshit, all right? So that's it. So that's what this movie was. Now, I will admit to you that the idea of taking that thing with like Ricardo Montalban and Welcome to Fantasy Island and Boss, it's the plane, right? Yep. Making that...
Both of which get hit on in this.
Oh, does it? Making that a horror, even though I don't like horror, that's an interesting way to go with it.
I hear what you're saying, but... It leads to a question that I had by 30 minutes into this movie. Who is this for?
Well, presumably you.
Well.
You and your people.
It's not horrific enough to be a horror film.
That's probably why I didn't mind it as much as
sure,
I could have.
Sure. It marketed as a horror film. The poster says horror film. The film itself is so not scary and not horrifying
this.
At all.
Yeah.
And yet it's based off this archaic property from 1977 Fantasy Island premiered. No millennial has any connection to that. So why are we tying it back in there?
I think what happened was this. Total conjecture, right? Someone said, hey, who owns this Fantasy Island shit, right? And it's some studio who's like, hey, we don't do something with this. I don't know. It goes through the whole studio system. And it's like, look, I understand why you wanted to do this. But like you said, no millennials or anyone who's going to the movies now will actually give a shit about it because it's too old. And so they go, what if we made it a horror? And then, ooh, that was interesting. And then a writer comes in and then it becomes this.
Yeah, except it's not a horror. It's one of the stories... is kind of horrific.
Yes.
Right?
I'm only now realizing that, of course, you would have a problem with this.
Yeah. So, it's almost like four films here between the five guests.
All right? Yeah.
And I won't spoil the specifics of it. That we can get into that on the other side. And boy, we need a spoiler section here because the way this film goes, holy shit.
Questions.
There are four stories. One of them is sort of relationship-y regret, One of them's like a war story.
Yep.
One of them's like a bro party gone wrong.
That is a weird one.
And the last one is soft torture porn.
Yes.
And I'm like, this isn't a horror film.
No.
And the film just completely is an editing nightmare. I would have hated to be an editor on this movie because you're basically delivered four different products and told to try to make it compelling.
Exactly.
The script fucking doesn't. The script makes none of these stories compelling. Or when it threatens to, we fucking flip away to another story and we're back to boredom again.
This is a thing I noticed as well. He's, well, you know, like you said, it would be hard to do this, but he's flitting between four stories and he's not doing it in the Star Wars way, which, by the way, only did three stories in the battle.
Yeah. Bang, bang, bang. And even that's too many, arguably.
You would, yeah. Well, they did it great in Star Wars because it was new. I don't know, but four stories now, just when things are getting interesting, you go to the other one. Then you go to the other one. And you're like, the net tone of this is fucking boring.
I agree. Don't back away from it.
Because you never actually get the climax. Or you do, but it's not so good.
The acting is awful. There is Michael Peña.
Oh, God.
Why would you cast Michael Peña and not give him anything to do with his natural charm?
Honestly, I'm way on board with this. So the Ricardo Montalban is, for some reason, cast as Michael Peña. Right? Or he's cast as that guy.
He's called Roach in this.
Rourke. Is it Roach?
Mr. Rourke,
So it's the same name, right?
Might as well have been Roach.
But it's the same name. Tattoo is gone. There's no fucking little, what's it called? Little person? Do I say that? Is that what I'm supposed to say?
I think that's appropriate.
Little person. Yep. Like saying, Baz, it's a plane, it's a plane. That's gone. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Michael Peña is nothing like Ricardo Montalban. And I know it's not that they're going for that. But like,
and he's nothing like Michael Peña. Like, if you cast Michael Peña, don't you want comedic tone to it? I'm sure. And look, he's been in Narcos Mexico season one. And he played serious there. But he had his charm.
You know what? I was just going to say to you, Narcos that Mexico, right? I was like, holy shit, he's actually a leading man. I've absolutely got respect for him as the undercover policeman, right? And like you said, every other time...
No, he's
like,
not even undercover, he's just a policeman.
Sorry, policeman, yeah.
FBI, whatever.
FBI guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. But every other time as well, like you said, yeah, he's funny as well. I can see why there should be no funny in this role.
Yeah, but then don't cast him.
Then don't cast him, exactly.
Right, and we're harping on him, but just apply this discussion to everybody else. Lucy Hale, who was also in Truth or Dare, I might add...
Is that the young girl?
She's the millennial you've been talking about. Her whole story is, I was bullied, and so her fantasy is revenge on the bully.
Yep.
Which is all in the trailer and the like. She's too beautiful to have been even remotely set upon like she was in this film.
Look, I didn't think...
It's not believable.
My problem... Because I've seen Plain Janes turn into someone beautiful before from school. However, I don't think she was that hot, so that's me.
Well, I think she's attractive. Yeah. I think she's more attractive than her bully. So I think that was badly cast as well.
Oh, good point.
And also the fact that no one can deliver a line here, which just doesn't help with the fact the script is serviced by lines of dialogue.
Oh, man.
Which includes, for example, just as one random example, someone puts a shotgun on his crotch and calls it the name of a male character another male slept with the night before. And I'm like, wow, this is the level that we have sunk
absolutely,
to.
Absolutely. And this is almost like someone was hired just to write those jokes. In the
and they're
in.
Awful.
Yeah, and they're awful. You know what? Oh, let me tell you something, right? You're talking about the acting, right? All the guests turn up on the jetty and they get you know, hello, how you doing, this is our thing, whatever. I hate all of them. I hate all of them, possibly the exception of Maggie Q because it's all good.
I can't help but like Maggie Q.
Okay, let's you and I be pigs, okay? Fuck me, she's beautiful.
She's beautiful.
She's amazing.
I mean,
right?
We're acknowledging that. She, I think, again, in the right role, she can be a very good actor. I don't think she's very good in this.
No, no, no. The reason it stuck out for me is because I'm like, wow, that's just great. But also, what's she doing here? Right? Like, what is she doing here? I've seen her in, you know, I love Ghost Protocol and shit like that, in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Right?
She was the star of the reboot of La Femme Nikita as well, if I remember.
Yes, that's right. She made her main name.
I think it's just called Nikita. Yeah.
That's right. And that was all really good. I mean, I've seen a couple of those episodes, but she's there. So that's fine. Okay. I liked her. Right?
She's okay.
Everyone else, all right? Especially the two bros.
Oh, my God.
They are doing this kind of acting. Hey, man, what's up? Yo, high five. Do you guys both high five? High five. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
All the time. Where? Ryan Hansen is the dude from Veronica Mars. He has never played any other role other than the dude bro guy.
Do you know what? When he came off the boat, I went, oh, it's Dax Shepard.
Yep. Oh, no, no.
I know, but to me, that's who it is, right? Although Dax Shepard is slightly better. Slightly.
Yeah, because...
I know he did Chips, but like...
But Ryan Hansen is so one note, it's frightening, and they just lean into that here. Look, if we haven't made it blatantly obvious, this film is complete and utter garbage. It's non-thrilling. It's nonsensical. We have to wait till spoilers to get into that part. The acting's terrible. It looks okay.
No, it's not bad looking, although I will say the Fantasy Island, when they do the you know, the crane shot or the drone shot,
yep,
on, it's not great weather. I reckon they had production problems. I was sitting there going, it's really like, it's not sunny. It's kind of overcast.
Well, I think that's also the color grading that they've done, or the color correction they've done. They've actually made it all bluey, green.
Oh, perhaps it was
gray,
on purpose
because
it's a horror. Supposed to be horror. Yeah,
I think they've
right,
dulled it down for that.
I would have liked to see something nice and then a good hug. Anyway.
That would be too nuanced for a film of this nature.
Yeah, perhaps you're right.
This is going, it's made $5.9 million thus far as we're recording early on Sunday. So that's only from the Friday numbers. It's going to make
its money. That's all right.
It's going to make its money. It's going to be just another hit in Blumhouse's litany of shit-ass films that are hits. It's an early call, very early, for one of the worst films of the year. And I'll go further. I'd say it's one of the worst horror films we're going to see, I hope, this decade.
I understand. And you know what? I think you're hating it more than me because it did not deliver upon its promise of at least being a horror.
Yeah,
for you.
Exactly.
For me, it did because I'm like, oh, there was one horror bit in it. Let's call it a horror movie. The rest of the time, now that I think about it, now that you're saying this, it's like, yeah, the other one's a father-son thing, which is back in time thing. And then the other one is like bros, and it's basically a siege. Like it's like a, yeah, it's like a thing.
It's like I said, dude bro, and gone wrong.
That's right.
Frequency and, redone.
Yeah. And and Maggie Hughes is more like a Twilight Zone episode. Like it's that.
Yeah. And now we need to go into the spoilers.
Sure.
It's hard not recommend. I've had a couple of the listeners, a couple of other podcasters in their own right, out of spite almost from my review, jump online to go and see this. And even they were like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Can't defend this. So Julio from the Contrarians being the primary one in that particular case. So anyone else is thinking about doing that, just you know how we say don't see it, you go let's see it. Don't, please, for the love of all that's pure.
You might be the type of person who could successfully watch something ironically. I can't do it. Or I can't.
No, I can when it embraces it's trying to be shit.
But then it's
like
not ironic.
The
Velocipasta like
or whatever. Not that I've seen that yet. Yeah, but that's the kind of film which is basically saying we know this is a terrible premise and we're just leaning into it. This film is treated as serious. This film thinks it's got something important to say. And the only thing it's got important to say is don't fucking adapt 40-year-old properties that have no relationship to horror.
That's what it is. This movie is Antoine Fuqua-ing. That's what's happening. It's self-insistent and really takes itself seriously.
Antoine Fuqua, this film.
This is fucking Antoine Fuqua
itself.
This film
is so much worse than Antoine Fuqua.
Dude.
Even shit.
The whole thing is Fuqua. It's
that could become a new statement
on
the show.
I
all
like
right.
this.
That is our basic review. If you want to stick around and find just how wrong the film goes, we're going to get to it on the other side of this and give our final scores. Spoilers then for Blumhouse's Fantasy Island.
I have a lot of questions for you.
Well, I don't know if I can answer them because this film goes so far away from its original start. Okay, so we learn that the island has two rules.
Right. Okay. Oh, God.
One fantasy per person, and the fantasy must be seen through until the end, come what may.
Right. That is what we are told.
The film lives by that for the first half of the movie, and then starts to throw in twists that completely undermine the rules that are established in this world.
Dude.
And as you know, that drives me fucking insane.
What happened at the end? All right? Because here's the thing. Actually, before we hit the end, let me tell you something, right?
Please.
About the way they're thinking, right? These characters, it takes them an hour to understand that they're getting to experience their fantasies. This is very different from the show. On the show, you have to pay $50,000 to become
a guest. 1977?
1977, exactly, jeez, right? Only rich people, right? Or people who got it given to them, whatever. They come to the island, and they know this is my fantasy, because Ricardo Montalban goes, and your fantasy is to fucking, I don't know, conduct an army.
It's usually sex stuff.
Yes, exactly. That was actually pretty funny. But then they go, cool, and then they, whatever, it happens.
Off they go and do it.
These guys, they're played like competition winners.
Yes.
And then that means that they don't know they're supposed to have a fantasy. So the bro guys, they didn't even, there's no story there even. Like the whole fun of the show.
Well, their story is meant to be that, oh, we came from a mixed family.
That is the most paper-thin bullshit. Like, so what, man? I know lots of people who are not looking the same who are kind of brothers. Puff Brothers, that's not news.
But they're nuanced because one of them's gay, Wayne.
That was bullshit, too. Like, it was just... But the thing is, the whole thing didn't work. Like you said, there was the acting. I don't know if there was bad directing or what.
Of course. The direction here is terrible, apart from some nice establishing shots.
Can you imagine?
There's nothing scary about watching something flip by in the background. If there's no tone established.
Yeah, and you know what? Those establishing shots will be a second unit director or something.
Probably.
So it's probably not even him. So there you go.
It's just terrible. Like, from top to bottom, this film is god-awful. I will give it credit only for... And this is a spoiler, so I couldn't talk. So
yeah.
I didn't see the dude from Silicon Valley surviving. Yeah. I thought he was an early kill, and he makes it through to the end. And
of course,
that's cool. And then he becomes Tattoo.
That was... is so weird. Like, because the whole time, I don't know if this is good or it's bad, all right? Because here's the thing. I knew the ethnic would survive because we're in this time.
Okay? I didn't. I thought he was...
20 years ago? No.
Not maybe. Because of his ethnicity, but because he was that character who's this fucking annoying... Like,
come on, bro, boy, you can't kill the only man gay of color. Man. You know what I mean? Oh, gay man of color, there you go. You can't do that, buddy. So that's what's happening there. But I don't understand why, like, they mainly make the shortest guy tattoo. You know what I mean? It's like you guys are going to have it. I don't know, man. This is such a poor thing. Now let's talk about the goddamn ending. All right?
Okay, so
I don't understand what happened.
So the four fantasies playing out. They all go wrong because the island sort of twists them. In fact, well, Maggie Q's doesn't go wrong. Maggie Q's is going great. And then she goes, nah, this isn't my biggest regret. My biggest regret, suddenly now all of these characters are linked by this fire in this apartment building.
By a dude that got burned up.
And he died.
That came out of fucking nowhere.
Well, we had seen flits again in the background of someone who was charred and whatever.
Yeah, but like...
So it didn't quite come from nowhere.
No, the foreshadowing was there. But the idea that all of a sudden Nick turns up, before you knew it was a fire. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Nick all of a sudden turns up late in the show and it's all of their stories.
But more than that. You live in an apartment building. Mm. A guy burns to death above you in an apartment. Maggie Q blames herself for this.
Yeah. How about the guy who lit
the
fire?
She doesn't know the other two guys that live with him.
Yeah.
They don't know each other. Bullshit.
Exactly.
That makes no sense at all.
Maybe it's because... Well, look, I'm here fighting for the movie just for fun, right? I know. But so she could have saved him, but she couldn't get through the door, so she goes down to get the copper, then she comes back.
But you're saying that in all this, like, you know... The fallout from that, even if you've never met them, then how does she know, like, oh, she heard his voice. I didn't know two other people lived up there. That makes no sense in this fucking world.
Oh, that is bullshit.
Like, you don't know your upstairs neighbor in an apartment with all the fucking noise, three dudes living together?
Yeah.
Fucking bullshit. Yeah. That doesn't work. Lucy Hale's character, can't remember her name, don't give a shit. She runs down.
She annoyed me so much.
She runs down to the cop who's on the island, and you realize they're all connected now, and tries to get him to come and help, and he wimps out because he's a bit cowardly in that moment, which is what his redemption story is in his arc. He mentions this regret and this moment, but he doesn't recognize her, the exact same girl that came less than a year ago and begged him for help.
It was actually Maggie Q that grabbed him.
Oh, am I mixing up?
Yeah, yeah.
You're right. Okay, but he doesn't recognize Maggie Q.
No one doesn't recognize Maggie Q. When you see Maggie Q and then you see her again, you're like, that's fucking beautiful.
My apologies. I did that wrong.
No, but that's cool. But the same deal. Same deal.
How do you not recognize A, her, and B, this is the moment that you're regretting?
Yes.
So none of this holds together anymore. Right?
To me, the entire end of it where that shit all happened was like a...
Well, that wasn't the end. That was like with an act to go, right?
Was it?
Yeah. And then the big final twist is... Oh, it all turns out it's all...
Yeah, the Nick. Sorry, I'm talking about that part.
The younger chick's fantasy. Hang on, but everyone gets one fantasy.
Yes. So why
are you...
Exactly.
With Sloan, whatever her name was, the bully.
She put some line out like, I was the first one here, or was the first one to make the... she said something, because there's some deal where there's like one fantasy at a time almost, and everyone else serves that fantasy.
Everyone gets one fantasy.
Yeah, but
everyone.
But that's not what happened.
Exactly.
Because it turns out
the film undermines its own rules. It makes zero sense.
And it doesn't.
And it just does this to try and throw you like, oh, ha ha ha, didn't see that coming. Because it doesn't hold together.
Which
is why no one saw it coming, because it's fucking stupid.
That's right. It doesn't explain why one person is allowed to violate the first rule of the island and no one else is.
But it was my fantasy all along. Huh?
Yeah, but why? Why is yours better than theirs, or more important than theirs? This is shit, man.
It's
a terrible
film.
And I reckon that this guy, he's designed the experience to be like a ride. He just whisks you along.
Don't think about it.
Exactly. And it's quite... That is the thing where I was going. This is acting is shit.
Everything's shit.
Writing is shit. Everything is shit. It's just like, why am I here?
That's why. That's what I wanted to get to. And I want to summarize it with you.
This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and
always,
I don't think I'm exaggerating
here. I do agree with that guy. Absolutely.
All right, I don't want to talk about this anymore. I think that's long enough to spend on this.
Don't go see this movie, is all we're saying. You didn't figure it out.
Final thoughts. You just heard them.
Yeah, it's shit.
It is absolutely terrible. It is deserving of February. And unfortunately, this is the problem with doing a weekly film review podcast in January and February. You are forced to deal with shit. It's the same every fucking year. We have had exceptions. We have had Deadpool in February and Black Panther in February. But by and large, films at this time of year are garbage.
I'm interested in whether people give a shit. Like, if there's no films that week and we don't put a podcast out, are they like, meh? Do they notice?
I think they would.
Yeah, yeah. You and I
everything know everything yeah. is about consistency in the podcasting world. But anyway, the point is, next week we're not doing that. We're getting away from cinema. We're doing TV. So
yeah,
hooray! We'll do something which, and I've seen some of it already. It's way better than this show.
Okay, good.
Way better.
TV's great. We That's shouldn't ignore
lock
it.
And key. But anyway. For the scores then for today, Wayne, anything finally wish to say?
Oh, no, fuck this shit. Mega Q's hot, 29. Actually, you know what? 35 because she's hot. So there
you are. You are.
Hey, I want to be. I'm looking for the good thing.
1.5, almost 2 stars for the hotness of one character.
Hey, imagine if they hadn't cast her.
I have decided in talking about this film that it is the worst of the year. It's worse than Midway. I've unfairly given that.
This one? Worse than Midway, you reckon?
Yeah. So
yeah, probably.
I'm dropping my score. I'm even going to drop it to 0.5 star. Fuck it. I'm giving this 10. And I'm not talking 10 out of 10. I'm talking 10 out of 100. Fuck this movie.
You know what is nice? Not that we're ever influenced by who gets us along to a premiere, but occasionally when I ragged all a fucking movie because it was really shit and we were treated very nicely by going to see it, I feel a bit guilty. I still do it. But I feel guilty. No one fucking paid us to get this. No one did this.
Because there was no literally there were no Thursday night screenings. Oh, God,
that's a dead giveaway as well, by the way.
It is a dead giveaway. So the reviews will be floating out there now. Piece of shit. That is it for this week's show. If you saw this and loved the film, please tell us how.
No, I want to hear. That's great.
And if you didn't love the film and you just wish to sympathize/empathize with us, then we also love to hear that. You can do so via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, via Twitter at thecountdownpc. You can join the Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes. And that's pretty much it. Follow us on Podbean, where we host the show.
Damn right.
Thanks so much for joining us again this week. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been the soundboard
you
for
already used
Blumhouse's Truth or Dare.
Bitch, please.
Sort your shit out, Blumhouse, for fuck's sake. We will catch you next time.
See ya. Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we're going to review... Oh, what? Sorry, cunt. I don't know why I always struggle with that. Sorry, let's do this again.